This week, gold and silver continued higher for the third week running, with the yellow metal finishing the year with a 12.5% gain. Well, happy new year and welcome to GoldSeek.com Radio. Great to be back with you this weekend. Chris Waltzik here with another edutainment-packed show. Two more top industry guest interviews. Bitcoin added about $1,500 this year, but now that the price is pulling back, gold and silver are gaining momentum. Is gold's advance due to typical Chinese New Year-related purchases, or could it be a longer-term trend? With everybody asking if Bitcoin is really gold 2.0, we're asking, is gold
the new Bitcoin?
The new Bitcoin. The new...
Bill Murphy from Gata.org tries to help me answer this question. He's got an upbeat outlook for the precious metals in the new year. He says gold and silver still the most overlooked and undervalued asset classes, but that pendulum could soon swing in our favor as leverage on the short side turns into leverage on the upside. And a new guest, Spective CEO Dylan Center and his colleague Nick make their show debut. Spective is a cutting-edge 3D virtual reality platform. Experts expect VR to be the biggest sector of the next 10 years. Unfortunately, due to unforeseen technical issues, the conference call audio quality was a bit degraded. Still, the Spective team is positioning to be a pay-per-view VR, the YouTube or even Netflix of VR. And for our Bitcoin fans and aficionados, we put up one of the few countdown timers this week, but the event seems to have come and passed. There has not been a split or fork as of yet for the SegWit 2X hit BTC. Of course, splits the tokens for investors, but we haven't seen any pop up yet. Plus, if you haven't yet signed up for the Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter, we have breaking stories virtually every day, sometimes several must-read articles and information for investors. My favorite crypto picks and favorite stock candidates. It's just been a fantastic year. Of course, the stock market has had a big rally. And then if you sign up now, you receive a free Ledger wallet for an annual subscription and a free Trezor wallet for a 5-year and 10-year subscription. 10 years, receive both. And Robert Ian brings us yet another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited in the precious metals sector on increased demand amid the Chinese New Year festivities. Plus, U.S. equities and dollar weakness added to upward momentum. Gold added $31, topping $1,309, ending the year with nearly a 13% gain. Talk about a bad news bears turnaround. Silver gained 70 cents, ending at $17.14, and it still looks like we're completing some highly bullish patterns that imply much higher prices. The precious metals XAU shares advanced 1 point, ending at 85. Black gold picked up $2, soaring to 60.5 per barrel en route, we think, to at least 70, and that's one of my best calls of the year, that Bitcoin, and of course, U.S. equities. The energy sector rallied as well. The Bitcoin ETF, GBTC, picked up 26 points and closed at $2,016 per share, up nearly 2,000% since we first added it to the candidate list, and at 1.3400% just a few weeks ago. The top story moving the markets, the dollar index touched a 3-year low on Friday, lifting bullion into the big plus column. While Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies remain the investment du jour, gold's recent advance has been somewhat under most investors' radar screens. The ETFs GLD and IAU advanced to their 9th consecutive session wins on Thursday, gapping above major moving average resistance. U.S. global investor CEO Frank Holmes said that he suggests at least a 10% weighting in gold. And I'd add to that, why not have a nice solid core position in Bitcoin? You can take just 1% and put it in BitMEX using leverage, and that could equal 10 to 20, even 50% weighting with very little risk. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, it appears investors are returning to discounted precious metals on buy the rumor, sell the tax bill fact in the U.S. equities. The technical picture just really couldn't be much more bullish. I expect silver to run early in the year, hopefully, to retest the 21 level and then consolidate before blasting to 23 and maybe even 27 in 2018, while gold could retest 1500 and maybe even the former bull market highs later in the year. Bitcoin is in no man's land right now, favoring sideways action. If the recent lows fail, I expect a retest of the 8,000 level, but if they hold, 20,000 plus, here we come. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly cloudy skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. Optimism over the tax bill waned, leading to profit-taking. The Dow Jones gave back just 34, closing at 24,715. The S&P 500 dropped 10, closing at 26,73. And the NASDAQ gave back 56, ending at 69,03. The top sectors on Friday, consumer staples, real estate, and gold. Plus, oil stocks gained. United States Oil, USO, advanced about 1%, while PowerShares DB Oil, DBO, picked up over 0.5%. West Texas Intermediate Crude gained about 1%. And in the technology sector, Apple gave back just a little bit, sliding to its 50-period moving average, following reports of weaker-than-expected demand for the iPhone X. Bottom line on equities. Well, my 2018 target for 24,000 Dow that we made several months ago came to pass, and using those same Fibonacci forecasts, it does look like 25 to 26,000 will be our next move if this current pause passes quickly. The USA Today's 7 Indicator Greed to Fear Index dropped from greedy to neutral. That's another plus. While the Fed Funds futures indicate slightly stronger odds of a rate hike next year as early as March, several months earlier than we normally expect. And that, I think, suggests that the Fed officials are somewhat nervous about an overheating economy. Typically pretty good for U.S. corporate profits and, by proxy, share prices. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. Right, virtual reality, is that the next tech boom? 2.0, Tales from the Cryptosphere today. Founders of Spective, this platform lets people, frankly, do what they want with virtual reality, not just at home, but commercially. It's a real pleasure to welcome Dylan Center and Nick, a co-founder. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us. Thank you so much for having us. I'm really excited to be here.
Great to have you both. Let's talk about Spective. You've got an upcoming crowd fund, or ICO if you like. Tell us about this dedicated virtual reality domain that we're hearing about. I mean, how is this the next big boom? Tell us why.
Basically, we'd like to think so. I mean, kind of as you look at cases like YouTube, it's kind of this all-encompassing streaming platform where when it comes to video content, everybody's going there and, you know, kind of getting everything that they want. And then also you now have Facebook, which is kind of acting as like a curating space where people are logging into their Facebooks and they're seeing a ton, you know, tons of video streams going there. And video media just kind of is the future of storytelling as we see it. And as virtual reality technology continues to develop in the future, we think that virtual reality streaming absolutely will at some point or another become a critical part of all of our lives. It's a matter of when. So our mission right now is to kind of create a platform wherein people can upload their virtual reality video content as well as watch really exciting virtual reality videos from home with their headsets.
Yeah, so just to add a little bit onto that, right? So as Nick is mentioning, virtual reality, we see it, the space growing right now to a point where it is slowly becoming more and more mainstream. And the reason we are getting in it right now is because we've seen a change in the industry where the content creators are able to start producing virtual reality content at a reasonable cost. So previously, there have been a couple companies to try to do this user community-based streaming platform for virtual reality. But the problem was, at the time, there was just nobody who could produce virtual reality content except for professional platforms, companies like Discovery Channel. But at the stage that we're right now, cameras are starting to come out that are like $180, normal camera price, that are able to produce relatively high quality virtual reality content. So we're starting to see more and more people create this content, and we are actually working with some of these content creators, people like Air Pano, who is an award-winning virtual reality studio who produces like scenic environmental walkthroughs and walkthroughs of cities, people like Jeremy Sarapa, who has a large following, millions of views on YouTube. He produces virtual reality experiences. we've actually partnered with some of these content creators who are going to be uploading on our platform as soon as we launch. And the reason for this is because the virtual reality community really, really wants to see virtual reality succeed. And as Nick mentioned, there are platforms out there right now like YouTube, which is nice, and it hosts virtual reality content. But that is not YouTube. It's not their forte.
Exactly.
So we are targeting the niche, what is right now a niche of virtual reality, knowing that this is going to become something much larger than just a niche.
Take a look at Oculus. It was laughable a few years ago, and now 2 or 3 hours go by. Do you want to facilitate the YouTube of virtual reality?
Dylan and I both really like to describe it. You might not be familiar, but do you know of a streaming platform called Twitch? Well, basically, it's a streaming platform where it's specifically focused and dedicated towards gaming. So people who are, you know, playing video games, they live stream it through Twitch, they have, you know, videos get archived there, etc. The interesting thing about this is that everything Twitch is doing could have just as easily been done on YouTube. Right? People could have uploaded their video gaming videos on YouTube, streamed there, you know, built their followings, etc. But Twitch made a really, really unique and kind of differentiated platform by just specifically focusing on that niche of gaming. In that same way, we want to dedicate ourselves to virtual reality and to kind of answer your question about where do we want to be 5 years from now. We want to be the dedicated and understood destination for virtual reality streaming. The place where when you get that headset, the first place you go to just have all the content that you could ever want to expect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I strongly fall in line with everything that Nick said. We're trying to be the gateway to virtual reality. We are trying to be the destination, as Nick was saying, where when you first get your virtual reality headset, the app that you would use or the site that you would visit would be Spective. And it would be that because it would be a simple user interface. You know, it's not something, one barrier to entry to virtual reality right now is that it is slightly difficult to use in some instances. We want to make it as easy as possible where you would just come onto our platform and start watching 360 videos. Now, 5 years from now, we do have some plans for additional content outside of just specifically user-generated content, things like live streaming of events. You know, we want to be a platform that almost hosts like a pay-per-view style event where we have sporting games and concerts and things like that you can come on and watch live from the perspective of the stadium. And eventually, we also want to start creating our own content in a similar way to what YouTube is doing with YouTube Red or Netflix does with their original series. But ultimately, as you mentioned, yeah, we are looking to become a destination for virtual reality content in the same way that YouTube is a destination for general video.
Okay, for both Nick and Dylan here, give us an idea of the type of partnering that's going to require, because clearly you want to have the manufacturers or the distributors or suppliers who are putting the needed hardware out there. How are you resolving that hurdle?
In regards to the hardware, this right now in this industry, it's more of just adapting and coding to specific hardware. So there's a couple other virtual reality video apps out there, and if you look at what they're doing, it's more a thing of each piece of hardware. So for example, the HTC Vive and Oculus Rift will require a different set of code, different requirements to allow users to use the platform with that piece of hardware. So we will have to work with those hardware manufacturers if new pieces of hardware are being produced. For example, Google is creating their new device right now, although it works with mobile, which hopefully will allow us to, we're going to be starting with mobile headsets initially, so hopefully that would allow the Google headset to seamlessly integrate within our platform. But as you mentioned, as new headsets are arriving in the future and such, there may be the need to work with them to develop the code in-house to allow those headsets to work immediately. But I think it's something that as this industry moves forward will be a lot more seamless, where every headset just instinctively, as you mentioned, maybe we work with them before these headsets are manufactured. But I think it'll be something really seamless as we move into the future.
I totally agree. I definitely love the Oculus Rift, but the one problem with it is that its price point hasn't quite, I guess, met people's kind of perceived value, if that makes sense. So there are a lot of people out there who they know about virtual reality, they've heard of it, they might even be excited about it, but they're not necessarily, you know, $500 excited yet. And oftentimes it's because they don't necessarily know what they would do if they got an Oculus Rift. You know, they go to Best Buy, they buy it, they come home, and where do you even start? And that's kind of what we, you know, aim to really kind of add substance to. But speaking further on that, and this is kind of like a really important note, is with the kind of introduction of mobile-powered VR headsets, you know, just attach your phone to, put on your head, these things are coming in right now at well under $30. They're scaling very, very, very well. People are really excited to go out and buy them and bring them home and, you know, watch these simple virtual reality videos. And it's, you know, basically $30, the decision becomes a lot better. There's not as much dissonance. So with that said, we really want to capture that audience. We want to give that audience of people who are just now starting and trying virtual reality, in other words, the new adopters, we want to give them content with which they can kind of enjoy and jump in this space. So initially, we're going to focus on the mobile integrated side. Moving forward, the next priority will be to get in with all the different hardware, but relatable and accessible for everyone. We think that mobile is one of the main ways to do that.
If you, anybody listening, if you have a chance to look at what we're doing and look at our milestones and such, as we raise these funds, we actually have plans to integrate a new user sign-up program that will allow, for example, one big thing is videos are going to be shared on social media platforms, right? And so we're going to have people come to our site to watch a 360 video, which they can watch on their computer, but obviously not with the same level of enjoyment as with the headset. But they're going to be coming to our site, and they're probably not going to have a virtual reality headset that they own. So we're going to be starting a new user sign-up where for X amount of people, we don't know how many it's going to be yet, it all depends on the funds that we raise, but we will actually be rewarding new users with mobile VR headsets. Because for us, the value is in retaining them on our site and having them enjoy the content that we bring them. And in order to do that, they really need a mobile headset. So we're going to be looking to reward users with that.
Give us an idea of just how you differentiate yourself from competitors.
As far as competitors, you know, most significantly, we want to look at those who have been doing streaming in the VR space. You know, one can say that YouTube is a competitor or whatever it may be, but because they're not focused on virtual reality, for this conversation, let's just set that aside. Now, as far as companies that have done virtual reality-focused streaming, there's basically three main competitors. You have NextVR, they do, you know, live streams of big events, concerts and sports and things like that. And then you've got Littlestar and also Jaunt. The thing about Littlestar and Jaunt is that they have virtual reality content. You can go, you can watch it with your headset, stream it. However, it's all kind of commercial. In other words, all the people producing the content are these huge entities, you know. You'll have the Discovery Channel, you have like some kind of independent partnership with a TV show, just kind of really big, high quality productions. It doesn't do much for driving a community. So what's going to differentiate us moving forward is that with our virtual reality streaming platform, everything is going to be focused on driving a community. In other words, we want people to be able to upload content. Just the average person that's maybe, you know, walking down a park in Italy, they have their 360 camera, you know, they record a 10-minute video of it, they upload it onto the respective platform, and then someone sitting at home in the United States can put their headset on and, you know, basically be in Italy for that next 10 minutes. But it's that community-driven component that's really going to set us apart.
Like Nick is saying, the competitors that we see out there in this space right now are, by and large, commercial. They are working with movie companies to release a virtual reality trailer, or working with a gaming company, or working with like BBC. That's great, and they have really good quality content, and the stuff on their site is the best it can possibly be in virtual reality. But we're looking to create the platform, like Nick was saying. We have a community of fans, and if you want to know why YouTube is so popular, it's because viewers on YouTube have the people that they subscribe to, and they follow their content, and they watch their content the second it gets released. And we're looking to create that same type of community where we have fans following one of our content creators, like an Air Panda, to get those experiences into 10 minutes of their day. They can experience Angel Falls. They can experience going through a boat ride in Italy from the perspective of people that are actually out there doing it. And that's the experience that we're looking to create. And as we were mentioning, as these virtual reality headsets are becoming more accessible and virtual reality cameras are becoming more accessible, it is entirely possible to set that up and start doing it right now.
Okay, guys, I want you to sell your whole concept here to Guilfoyle and Dinesh, to the hardcore gamers out there, okay?
We were actually having this conversation earlier today. Let me bring that up.
Yeah, okay, so I'm pitching to Ehrlich right now. All right.
Yeah.
On the technical level, what's really cool about this platform is that developing it moving forward is going to be very simple. There's a lot of source things out there right now. In other words, things that have already been kind of worked out and programmed. But particularly Google's done a lot of work in virtual reality space. Facebook, with their new programming language, is going to be a lot of how we're kind of moving forward. Right now, on the back end, we've done a lot of kind of boilerplate coding and programming on this kind of the account management side. So if people, you know, come in and have an account, there's kind of a whole back end that they're going to be interacting with. That's most of what's been going on so far. And I mean, the really exciting thing about it is that, you know, with virtual reality, we think it's going to be the future of the video streaming experience. And once it gets adopted, I think that the world can be really excited to use this software.
Long-term future prospects, if you're asking, things that could be developed in this platform, like you were mentioning, in-game and such. And so, for example, you know, we've been thinking, the possibilities of virtual reality are almost limitless. I mean, across every industry, it has use. And we're looking at things like, so for example, please keep in mind these are long-term goals that may be achieved in virtual reality as virtual reality moves forward in this direction. But for example, right, so we're talking about this whole community aspect. And having a community is great. So when people watch Twitch videos, they're in a chat box chatting with each other, chatting with the person creating the videos. It is in real time, live. People are communicating with each other. Well, let's look at that in the virtual reality space. The virtual reality space, it's very possible to create actual virtual reality environments where people have an avatar and they are literally in a community room. And as they look around, they see other community members. And they can interact with them. They can chat with the video. Maybe they see an avatar of the guy actually making the video. Long-term technical features. It's stuff like creating that. Like these, like rooms where people are actually interacting with each other while watching videos. They could be sitting on a sofa in a virtual reality environment watching a YouTube video, watching, you know, a video on a TV talking to each other. We're also talking about advertising the virtual reality space. So one of our big goals is creating an advertising platform where in these social communities, companies are actually able to set up virtual buildings, or even set up a virtual location, where when you walk there with your avatar, you can almost kind of, I mean, virtually walk into, let's say, a Pizza Hut.
Right, it's a zero theorem sort of scenario.
Yeah, no, it would just, so basically, like, one of the ideas that we're really excited about and playing with is that, because we're going to be kind of at the forefront of the virtual reality advertising kind of implication. So, with that, you know, one thing that will be really cool is you've got, you know, live streams of sports and you're about to, you know, sit there and watch a football game in virtual reality. At halftime, we can have a whole virtual environment where, as Dylan was saying, a Buffalo Wild Wings comes up, you walk in virtually, make an order, and that's integrated with LinkedIn with your home address, and then that food gets delivered to you. You have your bite to eat and you keep watching from virtual reality. So there's so many different ways that we can go about it. It's going to be really exciting moving forward, kind of seeing where the technical side of the industry kind of moves.
Let's talk about bandwidth limitations, constrictions, hurdles. Where are we going to cross the event horizon that sort of sends things into the stratosphere to where everyone with a couch with the Super Bowl is using your service someday? What's it going to take to get us there?
So, I mean, as far as bandwidth goes, particularly as it pertains to data, that's going to be one of our biggest kind of challenges moving forward, and where funding really, really is going to help us out. Just kind of hosting all that data, specifically as it pertains to virtual reality streams, which are huge, huge files, as long as we're kind of able to manage and we can continue to do a good job kind of reaching our audience, things will be looking great. But yeah, Dylan, you can definitely speak on that.
From the user side, I think ultimately what it's going to take is, personally, I would say we're looking at maybe a 3 to 5 year roadmap for virtual reality to really hit like a mainstream thing where it's something the majority of households have in it in the same way that they have a gaming console, you know, that type of user. And I think what really hits it is once headsets like the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive get to a price point where they're fully accessible for the average user, but also get to a point where they have enough applications around them that the average user has a need for them. For example, when television starts to get integrated with virtual reality, where maybe a VR headset can connect via Bluetooth to a TV, and you actually start having maybe a virtual reality television channel, that's where when it's going to become something that every user has in their household because it does have a need for them. Right now, people buying Oculus Rift or HTC Vive mainly are very early adopters, that are heavily in the computer space. They know a lot about it technically, and they're able to connect it to their computer. They're able to go into a Steam, let's say, and play games. That's not really accessible. So I think for it to hit that level, it is going to have to be something where it starts getting applications, like being on television, or as you mentioned right before we started this call, you know, our app could be on like a Roku, or it could be on, you know, like an Amazon Fire Stick, where a user could just open that up, open our app, and start watching videos. That's when this industry as a whole is going to have the bandwidth to allow everybody to start to join.
I was kind of speaking earlier to kind of internal bandwidth as a platform, and Dylan just kind of spoke on the industry bandwidth, you know, where what's kind of going to be the adoption rate and how's it going to look moving forward. I agree. You know, I think that there's a lot of projections right now that people are making about VR adoption, and as in those kind of market predictions, they're almost never going to be accurate. But when you experience VR as it is today, you know, you get a very special feeling that this is definitely going to be the future. It's just a matter of when. And I want to say, you know, somewhere post 5 years from now, I think that, you know, we reach a point where kind of you've got, as Dylan was mentioning, cable boxes and Amazon Fire Sticks and PlayStations all kind of integrating virtual reality channels. I think that that's when we're going to see a lot more headsets in people's homes. And from that point forward, just industry growth.
Excellent. Sounds like you guys are really well positioned. Parting thoughts from Dylan first, please, and Nick.
Personally, we'd like to thank you for having us on the show. We appreciate you taking the time to allow us to talk about our idea and talk to your audience about it. I mean, on our note, you know, for us, we are working on this idea because it's something that we have been really passionate about. I got into virtual reality about 2 years ago in 2015, just when I originally had this idea. Nick got into virtual reality. He has a funny story that he might tell you all in a second about it, but you know, this is something that we are passionate about, and the team that we've built around it, people right now, really working to make this happen. So we are trying to bring this virtual reality to the forefront, and we didn't get to talk about it today, but we're integrating crypto in it through the use of a crypto token that we're creating called a Signal token, which is going to allow people to curate videos and curate videos on Facebook revenue from curating these videos. So we're going to start allowing people that share videos to make money off.
You've piqued my interest.
So we're creating a Ethereum-based token called a Signal token. And the one thing with the internet as a whole is that we have a thing called attention markets, which are markets that interact with advertisers and then people that curate that content. And the thing with the internet is that there's so much content on the internet right now that the average user can't possibly sift through all of the content. So people curate, people that have like Facebook channels that curate a funny video. And that is where they're starting to watch their content. Well, in virtual reality, content isn't necessarily being curated because there's so much of it, but it needs to be curated because a lot of the virtual reality content out there right now is of such low quality that if a user's first experience was with that video, they would be turned off from virtual reality. So we are trying to create a Signal token which will encourage curators to promote high-quality videos that will allow a user's first virtual reality experience to be something that makes them want to continue.
Oh, I like it. So it's almost like the, you know, the algorithm behind Google's rating system there that works so well for them, except you want to sort of embed that into the VR code.
Yeah, we embed it into our platform. I guess I'll let Nick tell you a little bit about that.
Here with these attention markets, where fundamentally you have three main actors. You have, you know, the content creator on YouTube. That would be the person who's making the video. Then you have the viewer, the one who is, you know, watching that video. And then you have the advertiser, who oftentimes is willing to pay the content creator for a share of the attention they're driving, you know, whether that be through a banner on the video or, you know, however else they do it. This is how things traditionally were, you know, most recently. Due to major kind of internet and technological developments over the past several years, we now have an overwhelming amount of content online, where viewers no longer want to, you know, find the best stuff on their own. Rather, what they're doing is, they've got a Facebook feed, they've got a Twitter feed, you know, they're following certain blogs and forums where people who they trust are essentially feeding them all the best content. So if you're a big sports person, for example, you know, now you're not going on YouTube and looking for all the best sports highlights, you're probably just following a bunch of really great sports coverage kind of people on like a Facebook per se. So you just go on your Facebook and then you're sitting there scrolling and that's where you're getting most of your content from. So these kind of actors who are now curating this content have come in and kind of disrupted the attention market. They're playing a very valuable role. They're here and they're basically just gaining more and more and more followers, and they are basically curating content for those followers that is specifically catered to their interests. With that said, one problem that we have with virtual reality is adoption. Not everyone is coming in and adopting it as much as, you know, we kind of think that they should be, because we think there's a lot of great things happening here. So we wanted to address that. So we created Signal tokens, which is essentially our Ethereum-based token that will effectively allow those kind of big influencers to earn returns for successfully driving viewership to virtual reality content. So the way that it would work is that if you were, say, a big influencer on a Twitter, you had, you know, your 200,000 followers, what you could do is you could basically take a expected virtual reality video, you would be given a unique Signal link, you would share that on your Twitter feed, and then you would be able to basically earn a return and profit on just sharing that link with everyone. So we're essentially kind of bringing the economics closer to those who are sharing the videos to hopefully help drive virtual reality adoption and build a bigger network around the space.
You know, we're creating a Signal token. It's going to be an ERC-20-based token. We have a developer creating a smart contract for that right now, and we'll have that audited as we move forward. You know, if anybody is really interested in learning more about the token and more about the idea, they can go to our website, effectivevr.com. We're going to be hosting the ICO on our site, effectivevr.com. The way that the ICO is going to be structured is, so we're planning for it to launch currently August 14th, and it will last for 20 days up until September 4th, or until we hit our max funding goal, which is $40 million. If we hit that, the crowd sale will immediately end. We're creating 150 million Signal tokens, 90 million of which will be sold in the crowd sale, and they're going to be sold for a flat rate, 50 cents each. There is a bonus structure implemented so that if you participate at an early stage of the crowd sale, you'll be able to buy them, essentially, and get bonus tokens. So, for example, if you participate in level 1 of the crowd sale, a Signal token, normally 50 cents. If you participate in level 1, which is $0 to $2 million raised, you will get 40% bonus Signal token. So it allows you to buy them at a cheaper rate, essentially, than 50 cents, because you'll be getting extra tokens. So that's kind of how the crowd sale is structured. As I mentioned, it launches August 14th, and it'll be on our website. Well, first off, I would definitely also like to thank you so much for having us, helping us reach a bigger audience. It's always awesome. Also encourage you to check out our website at www.effectivevr.com. Effective spelled S-P-E-C-T-I-V. And yeah, it was a great conversation, and we really hope you guys please check out our website, check out our token protocol, and give us feedback on what you think. And if you'd like to support, then go ahead and join our email list. And so yeah, great conversation. We really appreciate it.
Sounds very, very intriguing. Thanks so much, and we'll hopefully follow up with you after the ICO.
Thanks for having us. Thank you so much for having us. Bye.
Wallace, it's a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy, chairman of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, working with Chris Powell on behalf of all global precious metals investors. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Great to have you back. And, you know, we've got the holidays just around the corner here. We'd really love to hear about your positive outlook, maybe, for 2018 on the precious metals sector.
Well, yeah, you know, because anybody who's been bullish the past couple of years, it's egg on face all the time. So gold and silver are the most undervalued assets in the world, with other assets flying and gold and silver under control of the gold cartel. And I believe that at some point here, they're going to lose control of the physical supply issue, and gold and silver are just going to go bananas. You know, probably what I've said last year or the year before, if silver can take out 21, it's headed for 100. And that's why the open interest is so high on the COMEX. The bad guys led by J.P. Morgan and silver are doing everything they can to keep the price completely nowhere, and it's worked, but it's going to blow up, and it'll probably happen when we least expect it.
I was reading through some of the literature from the World Gold Council on silver. 9 to 1 in the Earth's crust, so about 9 ounces of silver for every 1 ounce of gold. That's debatable. Some people say 10 ounces of silver in the ground for every 1 ounce of gold. Silver is consumed heavily. And everything, as we know now, from iPhones, Androids, laptops, computers, your flat screen TV, your car is probably loaded with little electrical instruments. That silver is negligible. It's never going to be reclaimed, except maybe by Bitcoin-based androids at the year 2075. But until then, most of this silver is tied up. And as it turns out, the above available stockpiles, according to the World Gold Council of silver, half that for investment demand of gold, meaning that there's twice as much gold, even though it's many times more expensive, and silver super undervalued, somewhere near 70 to 1 gold to silver ratio for some reason.
Well, first of all, the open interest on the COMEX and silver is just mind-boggling compared to the supply, above-ground supply you're talking about. It's off the charts compared to any other commodity. And normally, when a commodity goes down to a lowly price or near the cost of production, open interest completely disappears from the hedging scene. But this, because this is gold cartel-oriented and they want to keep silver under control, they have gone crazy in the paper market by issuing supply in that market, and that's why it's so high. And it's worked for them so far, but eventually at some point they're going to be overrun by the physical supply issue, and that's when everything falls apart. And this has been going on so long that Newton's law is liable to come into effect, meaning as long as this manipulation of silver, now our seventh year, is taking place, it's going to be that much on the upside in terms of the price movement because of the extent of what has been done on the downside.
There is one cycle that I've noticed over the last decade or so tends to hold true. For some reason, we tend to have a sell-off of the precious metals as we approach the end of the year, and then there's the remarkable spike. It's almost like clockwork. You know, manufacturers and retailers are preparing for the holiday season. After they've made their preparations, the price lulls. Who knows exactly why these cycles persist? But we've just had a rather strong sell-off. What do you think?
You're right. Past few years, that's what's happened. Prior to the last few years, the seasonal trend was for gold and silver to move up during this period of time. Of course, that was totally changed. And all I can say again is that, you know, with what other assets have done, gold and silver are so undervalued, and with all the money going into the system, two of the assets that should have been the strongest are the prices of gold and silver. And from our standpoint, it's only because of the gold cartel. They've been kept under wraps because they don't want this to be exposed, what's really going on behind the scenes. And so this at some point is going to blow up. And I've been saying that for a while, and that's not going to change. If anything, the more this goes on, the more likelihood that gold and silver will just one day explode out of nowhere.
And that type of explosion could be dramatic. One of our favorite online analysts just loves gold and silver, actually called the entire Bitcoin thing. Kind of rare to see someone who was just as right on the cryptos as they have been on gold and silver. Cliff High has been calling for remarkable advances in silver. He sees that there will be a mass migration of the everyday investor into silver, quite similar to Bitcoin because of the relative inexpensiveness in AG to AU. He really sees triple-digit silver in a very brief period of time, culminating with at least $400 in 2018. Now, we've been around the markets long enough to know that making such calls are not only premature, but it's just not necessary and it's harmful to portfolios. You know, with all this bubble mania sloshing around the financial markets, what do you think of his call?
A lot of respect for Cliff, and he's nailed the cryptos and Bitcoin, and unfortunately, he's been, you know, talking about silver for quite some time, and it hasn't worked out. But I said it, a lot of respect for him, and you're exactly right, and he's right. This is exactly what can occur in the silver market, what I was mentioning earlier about Newton's law. And I think the odds are continuing to grow this will occur. This is why holding it under 21 has been so important for the JPM crowd. And if I might, right now, all the cryptocurrency and Bitcoin commotion is really hurting the gold and silver sentiment and the investor interest, because this is what kind of thing that gold and silver should be doing. But now what they've done is set a roadmap for the precious metals, and especially silver. So if silver goes from 17 or to 34, so what? Compared to the Bitcoin stuff, it's nothing.
Yeah, it's a typical month in Bitcoin.
Now, I think people will not be surprised. And as you're talking about, the momentum crowd is jumping on board these other markets, and they see what they can do. And so that has set a roadmap again for the precious metals, again, especially silver, to just take off once the momentum players come in. And I expect that to occur.
Exactly. And I just throw out another somewhat novel or unique perspective on the situation. While many in the gold crowd are somewhat upset with us that we've bifurcated our interest into cryptos and the precious metals, I'd like to make the argument from a different perspective. And that is that if digital money is a new pseudo gold or new pseudo silver, what do you think is going to happen as the Bitcoin people take some big profits, which should be coming, and they search around and say, well, I'm not comfortable with stocks, and I certainly wouldn't put it into a 30-year bond bubble. I would argue that the most obvious alternative to Bitcoin gold, if you will, physical, tangible bullion. We should maybe be less worried by this remarkable advance in Bitcoin and currencies, and note that gold and silver remain the king. Eventually, some of those other currency profits might be looking for a safer or a sector that's a little less under the microscope of regulators in the coming months and years ahead. As we wrap up today, any forecasts or thoughts for 2018 for our listeners?
Yeah, well, the main one is, again, that the gold and silver are the most undervalued assets in the world right now, and been noticeably a lag this year, and God knows why, and that should change at some point, as I keep saying, out of nowhere. So it could be a better time for people to either buy gold and silver or stay on the case, because our time is coming.
Bill Murphy, Gotta.org, as well as La Metropole Cafe, we'd like to hear how we can certainly sign up to receive, you know, a subscription to La Metropole Cafe. Please tell people how they can, spread the holiday cheer.
Well, for La Metropole Cafe, you can sign up for a 2-week free trial. Our Gotta, with my colleague Chris Dowd, does a fantastic job. He got back a while ago from Europe to spread the word. You can go to www.gotta.org and get on his list.
Very good. Bill Murphy, we appreciate your thoughts. Happy holidays, and wish you a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you all.
This is Robert Ian with GouldSeek.com Radio. The first presidential election in which I was able to vote was 1984. A lot of people tend to overlook or forget that during the 1980s, Ronald Reagan cut federal taxes virtually in half, and as a result, tax revenues nearly doubled. It's taken a whole generation, but historic tax cut legislation has once again been passed. Cutting taxes is always a good idea. More economic activity leads to more production, growth, and opportunity. There are still plenty of issues that require resolution, like the debt, the deficit, the Fed, and the corresponding issues that surround those subjects. But make no mistake, lower tax rates, repatriation of foreign funds with the one-time corresponding windfall of tax revenues, coupled with a mindset of production and growth that can be actualized in short order, are fundamental building blocks for creating additional layers of much-needed change. There are many ways people and industries will benefit starting in 2018. The cut in the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%. The implementation of fully allowable deductions for capital expenses, and lower levies on repatriation of overseas profits. According to an estimate from Goldman Sachs, U.S. companies are currently sitting on $3.1 trillion of overseas earnings. For example, Apple has $252 billion overseas, representing 94% of its total cash. And according to data compiled by Bloomberg, Microsoft, Cisco Systems, Google parent Alphabet Inc., and Oracle round out the top five. A one-time repatriation tax of 14.5%, for example, with Apple, would equate to $36.6 billion in taxes. On the consumer side, chains and consumer brands expect the tax bill to boost demand for their goods and services. Many of those companies rely on middle and low-income shoppers for the bulk of their sales. And it is widely expected that changes to individual taxes, such as doubling the standard deduction, will increase discretionary income. Is the tax bill an economic panacea? No, it is not. But it is a critical first step to achieving other financial goals and tackling other previously untouchable political issues. There's plenty of work that needs to be done, many changes that must be addressed. But as we move into 2018, there is good cause for guarded optimism. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, wishing you a happy new year. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.